Are you a fan of all things nerdy? Do you love delving into the latest pop culture trends while also staying updated on the news of the day?
Hey there, fellow enthusiasts. Professor Aubrey here, and I'm thrilled to invite you to join us on Friends Talking Nerdy Podcast, where we dive deep into all things geeky, from movies and TV shows to video games and comics.
That's right, folks. It's Tim the Nerd, your friendly neighborhood geek, ready to discuss the latest professional wrestling updates alongside our takes on tech innovations and the entertainment industry.
But that's not all. We also understand the importance of mental health, and we weave in thoughtful discussions on self-care and mindfulness.
So, if you want to geek out while also taking care of your well-being, tune in to Friends Talking Nerdy.
Friends Talking Nerdy, where pop culture meets mindfulness. Listen now on all major podcast platforms.
You've been looking pretty good these last few weeks, man.
Yeah, I got a secret stash of the stuff in the mail.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you got the Caldera Lab stuff too, huh?
I did get it.
Dude, this is some great stuff, man. It's a 3-product regimen. You can go to their website and check the third-party results yourself. You don't have to believe Ray or I. But we've both been using it. It's great stuff. The 3-product regimen of the good, the base layer, and the clean slate. People who have used it are experiencing smoother and healthier looking skin. It's really great stuff. Go over to CalderaLab.com and use promo code DELUXE for 20% off. This is a great deal, Ray.
Yeah. Look good, feel good, live good. That's what I always say.
Absolutely. CalderaLab.com. Use promo code DELUXE for 20% off of your entire order.
This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Deluxe Edition. I am your host, Casey Shearer. Joining me, as always, L. Ray Sexton.
What's going on, Casey?
Not too much, buddy. How are you?
Fantastic.
Yeah. Why are we doing so good today?
Because we got to talk to our good friend, Ed Begley Jr. again.
Yeah. Such a great fucking storyteller, man. This Ed just recently came out with this book earlier this year, To the Temple of Tranquility and Step on It. I just finished it. It's such a great book, man. Ed tells a couple stories from the book in the episode, but make sure you go out and buy the book because there's so many more great stories that we didn't touch on. But before we get into the interview, Ray, let's just do our quick house cleaning. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right, let's see. We are a part of the Deluxe Edition Network. You can find all the other great shows over at deluxeeditionnetwork.com. And the podcasts of the month this month are Bacon is My Podcast and Beard Laws. Go check them out over at deluxeeditionnetwork.com. You can find all of the links over there. Let's see. If you want to go see any of our previous shows, go over to deluxeedition.show. I have them all over there, easily accessible. Go check out the Instagram page. Ray handles most of the duties over there on Instagram. What kind of stuff are you doing over there, Ray?
Oh, you know, the standard memes, birthday posts for celebrities, movie premieres, a bunch of reels from our show. They end up there, which is cool because, you know, they're like the quick bites, only they're called reels.
Yep. All right. Let's see. Oh, and go support the show. Go over to patreon.com/deluxeeditionpod. We have a special right now. We're running $1 for a month. Go get that.
What the fuck's wrong with you? Over on our Patreon page, the $5 tier right now is on sale for $1. $1 gets you the $5 tier. Go get it.
There you go. Come check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/deluxeeditionpod. And if you'd like to send us an email, email us at deluxeeditionpod. Today's podcast is sponsored by Copper John's Beard. Go over to copperjohnsbeard.com and use promo code DELUXE10 to get 10% off of your entire order. Did I miss anything, Ray?
Nope.
All right. Oh, yeah, I did, you asshole. Second week in a row. Where can people get your bootleg stuff? I was looking at that page. You got some cool shit over there.
Yeah, I do. I got all kinds of shit over there. 10 Cent Beer Night Podcast T Public page. You can get bootleg deluxe merchandise, but you can get 10 Cent merch. You can get weird ass shit there. You want Evel Knievel jumping over some kids on a tote bag? I got that shit over there. Come get it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff over there. You make a lot of cool stuff. There's a lot of cool memes that Ray is putting on t-shirts, tote bags, underwear, all kinds of stuff. All right, let's get into it, right? What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right, here is our conversation with Ed Begley Jr. It's good to see you, man. And now Ray and I can personally thank you for our copies of the book that you got us.
Bless you for looking at it. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I just finished it yesterday, man. What a great book, man.
You read it? Oh, my God. I'm more than a little impressed. Bless you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. So, yeah, the book, the big poster behind you, I just finished it yesterday. I actually listened to a lot of it twice. That's what I wanted to say. Before we got started here, you said that you were impressed that I read it. Are you as impressed that I listened to it?
Even more so. That's a lot to listen to, one guy talking.
Yeah, but it's you, man. It's very interesting to hear you tell the stories.
Yeah, it's been quite a ride since 1965, where the book starts, and I can't believe I'm still here, 74 years old and still working. Very lucky young man.
Yeah, it is pretty wild that you're still here, man, especially with some of the stories here. So I'm just gonna run down through some of them here. I don't know how many we want to actually touch on, because we want people to actually go and read the book. From smoking a joint with Charlie Manson, finding out that the woman that you knew as a mother wasn't your mother, to doing heroin with the lady who gave John Belushi the least lethal dose of heroin, spending 3 days in jail, to getting beat up and stabbed.
All true.
Just I don't even know where to start, man. It's... Come on, let's go.
I don't either. My wife would just ask me if I fed the dogs. I did not feed the dogs, honey. So, but I certainly went to the dogs in the years you're talking about. So you cited some of the major examples.
So the one story that really stood out to me is when you were driving your car and you hit all the other cars.
Right.
And you picked up the crutches guy.
1975, that was. It was Christmas Eve, 1975. And I drank a quart of vodka. I did a bottle of Chardonnay all by myself. Had a Quaalude and a half. And I thought it'd be a good idea to operate a vehicle. So I run into all these cars. And then suddenly I'm on another drug different than the others. That drug is adrenaline. It's pounding so hard in my chest. I get out of the car, talking fairly coherently, said to all the drivers, guys, I'm so sorry, this is totally my fault. I need to talk to these two gentlemen that I did not hit. Those two gentlemen were two sheriff's department officers seated right next to where I crashed into the cars. Said, guys, do me one favor and one only. Arrest me and take me in. What are you talking about? Have you been drinking, sir? Yeah, I've had a couple of drinks, but it's Christmas Eve, guys. You do what you want, though. If you take me to jail, it's only going to help my case. I've been pumping those brakes since back at Doheny Drive, and I've had it in four times. This is a defective vehicle. You will help me if you arrest me and take me in. Not only did they not take me in, I had them under the car looking for a leak in the brake line. No problem with the brakes. I hadn't touched them was the problem with the brakes. And they let me get in the car and go home. They don't do that anymore, by the way. I think that was the last time they did that very evening.
That's incredible. So there's a few stories in the book like that where you got away with things like that. You kind of alluded to it in the book a little bit. Do you think it was because of who your dad was and at the time when it happened?
I think they recognized the name. They might have even asked me if Ed Begley was my dad. But certainly you could get away with a lot back then, you know, looking the way I looked kind of like them. you know? And so they went, oh, okay, you're going to go right home, right? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I live a couple of blocks away. Apparently, they didn't even look at the license because I did not live. I did not live a couple of blocks away. I lived in the valley, a good distance away. And so, and you have to go over Laurel Canyon or Coinga Pass or something like that, or Coldwater. So somehow I made it home and lived. And more importantly, I didn't kill anybody and lived to tell the tale some years later.
Yeah. What were Quaaludes like, man?
I'm told ecstasy is kind of like that. Ecstasy wasn't around back when I was drinking and using, but it was a drug that was classified as an hypnotic drug. That was what several doctors told me at the time, not just lay people. A doctor too said, yeah, it's considered the hypnotic grade of sedative. And it certainly kind of hypnotized me. You're not supposed to take them with alcohol at all. You're not supposed to take them when you're going to operate a vehicle at all. And I did both and somehow lived to tell the tale. I don't recommend it, by the way. The young people out there, do not get a copy of the home game and try this.
Yeah, reading that section of the book reminded me of that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, the
Wolf of Wall.
Exactly like that, Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
I did that crawl more than one time. Couldn't walk. I would crawl from the bed to the bathroom or vice versa, or, you know, crawl back to my room, totally immobile, totally hypnotized, and much, much more. It's kind of amazing what we can survive.
It really is. So let's see. I just have scrambled notes here. I was cleaning and listening to the book. I didn't realize that you did so many different voices. We had you do your Peter Falk impression the last time you were on.
That's right.
In the book, you do John Lennon, Arnold, Jack Nicklaus, and Marlon Brando, and I probably missed a few, too.
I used to be able to do Jack Nicholson a lot better, but my throat's gotten old and kind of tightens up a little bit. And also, when you go deaf, you can't do a voice quite as good. You can't, because you can't hear what you're saying. Other than that, I do them just fine.
Yeah, they were great. How about tell the Arnold story about taking photos of Arnold.
Well, there was a fellow by the name of Tony Hendra, and he was the editor of a great humor magazine called The National Lampoon, which I read every issue when it came out in 1970. And at some point, this was now 76, let's say. Yeah, because I was married by this time, and I had a kid on the way. So Tony Hendra said, you're friends with this guy, Arnold, and so I want to put him on the cover of the magazine. Within the magazine, there's going to be a cover of an issue where it's going to be called the gay issue of the National Lampoon. And we want him, instead of Pumping Iron, the documentary film he's widely known for was called Pumping Iron. He said it's going to be Iron Pumping, where he's going to be ironing a dress in an apron or something. I said, I'm not going to ask my friend Arnold to do that. You know, I just did a movie with him with Jeff Bridges and Sally Field called Stay Hungry. And this was his first movie, and people thought he was going places. Said, I'm not going to ask him that. He'll never talk to me again. Tony kept hounding me. And then Tony Hendra finally discovered the trick to getting someone like me to do something. All you had to do is ask the fourth time. The first three times I'd say no, but if you took it to the fourth time, I would finally go, just to shut somebody up. Like, okay, I'll jump off the bridge. Whatever you say. I'll have a Quaalude and a half and a quart of vodka and a Chardonnay bottle. You know, you just had to ask that fourth time. So he said, come on, please. Okay, I'll call Arnold. I'm so sorry, but this friend of mine at the National Lampoon, do you know the magazine? Yes, Eddie, I've heard of that. Good. Well, they want to do a cover within the cover where you're ironing, you're holding an iron over an ironing board, and you're ironing a dress while wearing an apron. It's going to be, instead of pumping iron, it's iron pumping. Eddie, this is funny. We do this. When do we do this, Eddie? Are you serious? You actually want to do it? Yes, because this is funny. I like a good joke. So I went and did it. And then when the session was over, I said, they needed you to fill out this W-9 form to get a check. They're going to give you a modeling fee of like a couple hundred dollars. He said, I won't fill that out. Eddie, you take that money. You have a young family. He was doing it all for me. Very sweet guy, Arnold. He knew I had a young family. He said yes to it. And indeed, he wanted them to send me his modeling fee. You know, a lot of people have different opinions of Arnold, and he's the other side of the aisle for me politically, but what a good guy. And also, within any side of the aisle, he was one of the best governors we had environmentally at the time, and a woman's right to choose and sensible gun laws. He was progressive in so many important matters.
Yeah, I just recently watched that documentary of his, and he seems like a genuinely nice guy.
He is that. He always has been.
And a lot of people, I guess, don't know that. He made a lot of his money before he even became an actor in real estate, right?
He did. At the time we did Stay Hungry, I was having a problem because the people, I was mailing my rent check to the landlord, or I was subletting it. So I was mailing it to the actual tenants that had the contract, you know, with the landlord, and mailing it to them. And I had to put money in the bank from the movie, and I was late, and, you know, I was getting charged these late fees, and the landlord was upset with me. Arnold didn't have any of those problems. He owned the building he was in. He had been to Santa Monica College to study business. He had a degree, an associate's degree or something in business at that point already. He owned the building he lived in, the building he had his offices in. So when I saw him the first time, I thought, what a meathead, but circle the meathead in this picture, and it wasn't him. I was the one behind in my rent, not Arnold.
That's funny. So at the very beginning of the book, you talk about when you were 15 and a half, you were going for your driver's license, and your dad had to get your birth certificate for you, and your mom's name wasn't on it. So you found out that the lady that you knew as your mother wasn't your mom, and you found out who your real mom was. Did you ever have a relationship with your real mother at all? Did you ever?
I'm so lucky that I did have that. But at the time, it's so interesting how immature we are and what lack of perspective and lack of gratitude we have. 15 minutes before I heard this news of who my mother was from my birth certificate, my mother was dead as far as I knew. Now suddenly my dad gives me this shocking news, and I have a mother of the live variety. That's a pretty good day. Suddenly my mother's alive again. And so, but I didn't have a lot of gratitude at that part of my life. I wasn't even grateful I was born Ed Begley's son. You know, I just kind of thought a lot of things were owed to me and behaved accordingly. But I got to know her and love her, and she was around and a big part of my life since 1998, when she sadly passed. Very charming woman, very knowledgeable woman, and my sister and I are very grateful to have known her and had her the years that we had her, which were many.
Great. That's awesome. So let's talk about your, you did a lot of comedy back in the 60s, stand-up comedy. And one of the things I found interesting is you did a bit where you would take, I guess, photos. You would print out photos.
Yeah. And I was a prop. Up. I was a prop comic. So I had these different items I would hold up, different, you know, gag items, and also some pictures to pay off a gag. I had a big picture. I thought it was big, 16 by 20. Worked very well at the Ice House in Pasadena. Worked very well at the Troubadour or the Bottom Line or Max's Kansas City. But now I'm on stage at Nassau Coliseum, and Einstein didn't quite think it through. The first 10 rows loved my ass. They were like, oh my God, laughing their ass off. I came out in a cop uniform. People are roaring with laughter, and I have all these gags. They start to be paid off with these items and these pictures about 16 by 20 inch. And then it started. Poco, 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 Poco. You know, I was opening for John Sebastian Poco and Logan de Messina. And so they were kind of done with my comedy at that point. They wanted the opening act. They didn't want the opening act anymore because I hadn't quite thought it through. Basic stagecraft, but I finally learned it without being killed. Thank God.
There's a comedian right now that I just found. There's a show on YouTube every Monday called Kill Tony. And the premise of the show is the comedian gets 1 minute to come out and tell a joke or tell jokes or whatever and make the host of the show laugh. And this comedian, Casey Rocket, he does that almost exact same thing. He has these, and I don't know where he even pulls them from. He's got like dozens of them. They're just 8x10s though. And but they're in small, it's in a small room, you know? So like, I'm wondering that if he would go to a bigger place now with the, you know, the cameras and the screens and stuff, that if it will go over better.
Yeah. Back when I was doing this, Nassau Coliseum, there was no Jumbotron. They didn't have it at that point. This is 1974. So nowadays you could just, you know, there'd be a close up on a camera of it or what have you, or certainly you could bring your own visuals, which I did with 1974 technology. My friend Tony Amatula went on the road with me, and he operated a slide projector I had. I had like a real high quality Kodak slide projector with a very bright bulb and a long lens. And so I could, you know, no matter what size, Nassau Coliseum size even, I could set it up and, you know, cover the, you know, put it on a wall or something. if there was a place to project it onto. And that's what I did. I traveled around with it, with a slide projector, 1974 technology, long before we had solid state anything, you know, besides transistor radios. We didn't have a lot of solid state equipment back then.
Right. All right, let's go into, oh, you mentioned the cop uniform. You would wear a cop uniform. You've, I guess, forgot to take it off one night and got arrested for impersonating a police officer.
Yeah. Spent my opening bit in the 70s, drug humor was very big. So I'd have the sound guy do the introduction. I just write a piece of, I had a piece of paper that I'd hand them. They'd go, we'll be out. We'll be continuing on with the show in a minute. We'll have Dave Mason out here. First of all, we have a member of the Los Angeles Police Department, and he's going to talk to you kids about some problems in the community. And so please welcome Officer Ed Begley. And people would be very understandably upset. They didn't come to pay to hear some you know, input from an LAPD officer. Whatever town I was in, I would, you know, mix it up and say I was from whatever police department. They didn't pay to hear that. That's the last thing they wanted to hear. But the people that were booing the loudest would then laugh the loudest because it got more and more absurd. And, you know, I paid off with all this crazy stuff dressed up in a cop uniform. And it was a surefire 1970s drug humor, you know, bit comedy routine. And but one night I had gone and done my act out in the San Fernando Valley at this little cafe, but I left the police uniform on. Because I'm in my car, wasn't out walking in the street. But then when I went into the Troubadour, I with some friends, I said, let's go get a bite to eat next door at Dantana's, this restaurant that I frequented. You know, I went there quite often. So I said, sure. And I took off the badge and the belt. So I figured I was okay. I figured I'd, you know, just look like a security guard or something. But walking just a few doors down, the same sheriff's department came by that would later come by and, you know, let me off the hook. This time they thought I was an LAPD cop and they felt, you know, they felt they had been had or something. They said, are you in pursuit? What? Are you in pursuit? No, I'm just here at the Troubadour. I'm about to go on stage. That was a total lie, by the way. I wasn't about to go on stage. I was just getting drunk with some friends. And so I said, well, you have these little patches on your shoulders say Motor Pool, LAPD Motor Pool. You're impersonating an officer. I said, I'm not, but are you going to go on the set of Adam 12 and a rent kit? Arrest Kent McCord and Martin Milner. Leave me alone. I'm an actor. But they took me to county jail where I did some of my best comedy to keep everybody's mind off other more frightening things.
It's so funny, man. Let's talk about, I looked up the lady. I knew of the story about your friend John Belushi, you know, getting the lethal dose from, what was her name? The heroin dealer?
I hate to even say her name, but her... this unfortunate person's name is Kathy Evelyn Smith. I don't even know if she's still alive or around, but I was foolish enough in those years to buy heroin and try it four times. And once or twice I had bought it from her. And she unfortunately was a person that wound up in the same room with John and administered that fatal dose. And just horrible to lose a great talent that early. I hate to focus too much on that part of his life. He was such a great comedian, made me and so many people laugh. He's a great comedian that we lost too soon, and we all love him.
Yeah, and he basically saved you from alcohol.
Oh, totally. As bad as people thought John was, or in fact was, I was worse. We were at the hotel in Durango, Mexico, working on Going South, and John and Judy Belushi literally dragged me out of the bar. Where are we going? You're not going to sit here and drink all day. We're worried about you. You're going to go see some of the sights and sounds, have some food here in Durango. You can't just sit in the bar and drink. I was so far gone that John Belushi thought he was greatly concerned about my well-being. That's where I was at in 1977.
This, I had a question about this. So you mentioned that you originally were a vegetarian, that you stopped eating all meat, all everything. And then you went vegan. What is the difference?
Vegan is just plant matter and nothing else. Vegetarian, you can have, and people draw the line at different places. You know, you can have some cheese or dairy products. Some people eat eggs. Some people are pescatarians, eat some fish. People, you know, wherever, I think whatever amount of plant food people can eat, whatever amount it is, I think the more you eat of it, the better for your health and certainly for the health of the animals in cages. You know, some of these feedlots in very cramped quarters and bad situations, slaughterhouses and what have you. So I'm no longer a vegan. I'm a megan now. What's a megan? I mostly vegan. I occasionally have a little bit of dairy or something, and but I eat pretty good, and I'm 74 years old and reasonably good shape. So I've been very happy with the way things have gone with my diet my whole life. I started eating good when I was 21 years old, and I think it paid off.
Yeah. Have you ever thought of like, in all the things that you've done, have you ever thought about opening like a vegan restaurant or vegetarian restaurant or anything?
I have, because I have about 20 really great recipes that I pull out when I'm going to cook for friends that come by. And so I've often thought about, you know, having a restaurant. I'm not sure I'd have the time to cook there much, but I'd help recipe the dishes with a real chef and have some of that good vegan food. Because I know a lot of people that are vegan, but I also know a lot of people who eat meat or fish or dairy. And so, you know, I'd have a lot of food available for people that would, you know, that could certainly use some healthy food, and food, the most importantly, tastes good. It's got to taste good, or people aren't going to come back again.
Yeah. Yeah, Danny Trejo's making it work, man. Trejo's Tacos. You could have a little place called Begley's. I think it would work.
Wait, who has a place?
Danny Trejo. It's not
Danny Trejo. I love that man. I know him a little bit. What a great actor. What a great guy. That's right. I got to get by there and support him, because he helps the community a lot too. Danny Trejo is a wonderful citizen of Los Angeles. I really, really like the man.
Yeah. So here's a question that you mentioned the movie in the book, but a couple weeks ago we did an episode with a buddy of ours about the murder, the unsolved murder of Bob Crane.
Right.
You were in the movie Super Dad.
I was. We worked with him at Disney Studios. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. Was there any, so like, in the episode that we did, like, there was information that he was going around like with a book, showing people like his photo book, his photo albums. You remember any of that?
No, we knew none of this. Me and the crowd, that all the kids being people in their early 20s. Most of us were in our early 20s. I think we were supposed to be playing teenagers, but we were, most of us, like me and Bruno Kirby and Kurt Russell, in our early 20s, like 21 or 22. I never heard anything about that. It wasn't until years later it came out. You know, I asked several people, Kurt and others and Bruno Kirby, you know, did you know anything about that at the time? And none of us did. It was just a secret part of his very strange life. Very nice fellow. Was very nice to us all on the set. But he certainly had a very unusual life that he led a few layers down.
Yeah, he sure did. Man, there's so much in your book. That's just a taste of it. We want people to go and buy it. Your friendships with O.J. Simpson and Robert Blake, two murderers.
Yeah, I knew both those fellas and was quite friendly with them until they started killing people. My opinion, it was certainly the opinion of many that O.J. did it. Robert Blake was more controversial. It was not the kind of physical evidence that there was with O.J. With O.J., there's 38 pieces of physical evidence, blood and hair and fiber and what have you, things like that. But with Robert, it was a lot less. But I certainly was of the opinion that he either did it himself or paid someone to do it. But he's gone now, so I hope he finds some peace wherever he is. And certainly his wife, who passed away under unfortunate circumstances, the mother of his child. I'm not certain if they were married, but certainly she was the mother of his child. So hope they both found peace. But that was an unfortunate thing. But he did say to me, he actually said some things to me about what you do with a murder weapon. You throw it in a dumpster and you put pasta sauce in your hands and you do this and that. He said a lot of things to me that later were, you know, seemed to be repeated in this case with Bonnie Blakey. And so, very unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just the taste of the book. There's so much more in it. I learned a lot about you and a lot about a lot of other people in the book too, which it's just amazing that your friendship with all these people in Hollywood has lasted as long as it has. And when you write a book like this, do you have to get like everyone's permission? Everyone that's still alive, do you have to get their permission to use their name in the book, or do you ask them?
A good many people I ask. Some people I couldn't ask because I couldn't reach them or they weren't around anymore. But I asked a good many people, sent them a copy of it to see if they were okay with it. Most people were, because really for stuff like the consumption of alcohol and things like that, that I did, I try not to throw anybody under the bus with that, with whatever their addiction was or might still be. You know, I don't, that's my thing to confess or not, not, it's not up to me to out anybody. But, and the truth is I've had so many good relationships with so many people. It's not like I'm covering up some ill feelings I've had towards this one and that. All of that is very heartfelt. The people who've been part of my life since the 70s, the ones that are still alive and among us, I'm still friends with them. I don't have a lot of enemies in this town, and I'm very proud of that because, you know, when you've been as fortunate as I have been, it's hard to be angry about much because, you know, I won the lottery being born Ed Begley's son. I didn't grow up that way. You know, at age 16, when I made that unfortunate discovery, it was another reason to be a victim and to be, oh, poor me kind of frame of mind. But I quickly, when I got sober, finally in 1979, I realized how fortunate I was and how much gratitude I should probably have being born Ed Begley's son. You know, I won the lottery and I didn't even buy a ticket being born his son, because I got to go in a field that is quite amazing, you know, the field of entertainment, and to still have a career till here I am 74 years old. So I'm very lucky, and there's no other way to describe it. And so it's hard to be upset. In fact, let me give you one quick story to close out that thought. I went up to audition for a show called Saint Elsewhere, and I did not get the part. What part? The part that I wanted. It was a part of a regular called Dr. Peter White. That's the part I wanted, not the bone that they throw through me, right? Dr. Ehrlich, he had one or two lines. That was a nothing part. He wasn't a regular. He was going to come and go in one or two episodes. But somehow that part of Ehrlich went on to be one of the most important characters in the show. And Dr. Peter White, the part that I wanted and didn't get, he gets shot in the stomach and he's dead halfway through the second season. So the universe's plan for me is much better than anything I've ever been able to concoct. So it's hard not to feel lucky and filled with gratitude for all the people I've crossed paths with over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you said in the book that if your dad would have been a plumber, that you would have probably ended up being a plumber just because you wanted to be what he wanted to be.
It's true. I wanted to do what he did. If he had been a plumber, I'd be fitting pipe now. I'm convinced of that. But he was an actor. But the problem with that is he made it look so easy. I went, you know, get me on Wagon Train. I want to be on Gunsmoke. Get me a Perry Mason. In fact, now that I think about it, not just one episode. I want to be in all of them, like Dr. Peter White years later. You know, but I want to be a regular, for God's sake. Can't you pick up the phone, Dad, and make a call and get me a part? He couldn't even get himself a part as a regular by picking up the phone. He didn't have that power. I didn't know that as a kid. So right. I went on a bunch of auditions and never got any work because I hadn't trained. I finally took some classes and started to train, and then I began to work and have somehow been working ever since.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. Yeah, we're big fans. And let's talk about this stuff now. The Begley's cleaner.
You guys, you're so nice. The book and now this, that's so sweet of you to remember that I have that stuff. Non-toxic cleaners. We got the pet stain and odor remover there. A moment ago, he had the floor soap in his hand. It's great stuff. It's non-toxic because you got kids crawling around the floor, putting their fingers and their toes in their mouth. Same with your pets, putting their paws in their mouth and licking their paws. You don't want to have anything toxic. When you give them a bath, you don't want it to be a toxic chemical. So as much as you can in your life, stay away from toxic chemistry. Keep the stuff that's clean and green under your sink. And everybody, your pets and your family will be very healthy. So that's what I've tried to do. It's available at Amazon and elsewhere at many Costco stores. Now we have the products. So check it out, Begley's Earth Responsible Products. Or just type in, just remember, Begley Cleaning. Two words is all you need. Or for the book, it's Begley Book. And you'll come up with that book, or Begley Cleaning. You get the cleaning supplies off whatever search engine you use. So bless you guys for mentioning that. You guys are so sweet. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And I got to tell you, since the last time you were on, I switched over to, I don't use plastic bottles anymore. I switched over to this Liquid Death water now.
Good for you. I'm doing the same. I have as much metal in my life as I can, my metal water bottles and, you know, coffee mugs and what have you that I take when I go on the road and all that stuff. That we can eliminate a lot of plastic. We should eliminate as much as we can. And that's my goal, to have zero plastic in my life, other than permanent plastic stuff that's not single use. My eyeglasses are a perfect thing to make plastics aren't all bad. You know, to make something like glasses out of them is a very good use of plastic, or the computer, parts of the computer are made out of that. So that makes sense. But throwaway stuff, what they call single-use plastic, I think we need to stop doing that as quickly as we can.
Yep. Awesome, Ed. Thank you so much, man. Ray, you have anything for Ed?
No, I just enjoy listening to him talk about all his stories. And I want everybody to go out and get his book, because he is a great storyteller. And if you want to hear the audio book, you should definitely check that out also.
Bless you, Ray. Thank you guys so much. I'm so happy to be on with you again. I always have a good time talking with you. So I'm quite grateful yet again.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you once again for the book. And thank you too for the shout out that you did for us for our 100th episode. That we really appreciated that.
Anytime. You guys are great. You guys got a great show here.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
I look forward to it, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Have a good night.